So our next speaker is Rebecca Barter. She's a PhD student in the Department of Statistics at UC Berkeley, and she'll be talking to us about superheat.
Hi, my name is Rebecca. So I'm here to talk to you today about an R package that I've written that makes really cool heat maps. So basically, this idea kind of came about because my advisor, Binyu, she wanted to be able to visualize a design matrix while also visualizing residuals, for example, of a model that should fit. So basically, the idea is if you can cluster your observations, you can see are there regions where my model isn't working well, and if so, what's happening in the data in those regions. So I'm sure most of you know by this point what heat maps are, but just in case you don't, a heat map is a way of visualizing a matrix of numbers. So for example, on the left, we have a matrix of numbers that range from 0 to 10, and then on the right, we've just encoded these numbers into varying shades of colors. All of them happen to be blue because that is a good color. So basically, heat maps are just a really nice way of seeing within a matrix where are the large values, where are the small values, are there patterns? And it's a lot harder to see that just by looking at the numbers themselves. So where are heat maps used? They're used a lot in bioinformatics. So I used to actually work in bioinformatics, and you pretty much every paper will have a heat map in it. And they do a lot of clustering and a bunch of cool stuff like that. But they're not really used that much in other areas. So this is something that I don't really understand, because heat maps are really, really, really useful. And I think maybe the reason they're not used as much in other areas to visualize multivariate data is because it's not that easy to implement pretty ones. This is pretty ugly. that's just my opinion. No offense to anyone who really likes really busy plots. So that's kind of why I feel like we need a new heat map package in the first place. There are a lot of existing packages. So for ggplot fans, there's geomraster or geomtile, which actually makes really nice kind of heat map type plots, except for the fact that you have to transform your matrix into a data frame, which has values and then the x-coordinate and the y-coordinate. And that's really hard to manipulate and very not intuitive. Basically, you want to be able to plot a heat map by going heat map function of my matrix. You don't want to have to transform that into a long-form data frame. Also, if you want to add anything to it, you need to really know how to use GTable, which is not that intuitive unless you've done it a lot. There are also the kind of standard functions like image and heat map and heatmap.to, which they make fairly standard heat maps, but they're not particularly pretty, and they're not very easy to manipulate. If you want to add anything extra to it, or if you want to cluster or rearrange things in a very kind of easy and intuitive way. And there's also a bunch of new interactive heat map packages, which are pretty cool. So there was a guy yesterday talking about these, and I would really love to incorporate interactivity into mine, which I don't have yet. So there's a lot of really cool packages out there. And there's another package apparently called Complex Heat Maps, which I haven't looked at yet. Apparently I should. Deals with S4 objects, so I think it's less intuitive to use. Mine's kind of aimed at very kind of simple usage. So basically, I'm just going to start off with a really simple data example. So we're looking at the US presidential election votes, and I'm going to be focusing on just kind of what can you do with this package. So here is the data. I've not plotted all of the states because the screen is only so big. So basically, it should be fairly obvious even just looking at this what it is showing you, right? So a cell, the x-axis, for those of you maybe at the back who can't see, it's just got the years of the election. So it goes from 1916 to 1976. And the y-axis is the states in alphabetical order. So a really, really red cell implies that in that year and in that state, there were many more votes for the Republican candidate than for the Democratic candidate. Similarly, a blue cell implies that there are a lot more votes for the Democratic candidate. So even just looking at this, which, by the way, if you want to make this plot in my package, all you have to do is write superheat, and then X is equal to that matrix. And then you can set a few aesthetic parameters, for example, the color scheme, which I used R Color Brewer, made it go from blue to red. And just kind of setting colors and stuff like that, which is pretty basic. And you're going to get something that looks like that, which is pretty nice, I think. So what if I wanted to rearrange things? Instead of having to go and rearrange, make a new matrix with new column orders and stuff like that, I could even just say I want to have my heat map, I want to have two clusters. So all I have to write is I want to write the number of row clusters is 2, and it's just going to run k-means or hierarchical clustering or whatever you specify, and it's going to cluster into 2 groups. The default would be to say this is cluster number 1 and this is cluster number 2, but I've decided to force it to still have the state names, which is very easy to do. But then, like, these 2 clusters might not really mean anything to you. It kind of looks like these ones are southern states and these ones are not. But maybe I want to enforce that, right? I want to give it my own clustering algorithm. My clustering membership. So why don't I just say, okay, cluster by region. And so I just give it a membership.rows vector, and it goes and does that for me. So that's really nice. I don't have to actually rearrange my matrix at all. And so this is something someone told me a while ago, that something interesting happened around the 50s where the Democratic Party and the Republican Party kind of switched. So I found that kind of interesting, because here you can see the southern states seem to be pretty democratic up until about 1950. So I found that pretty interesting as a non-American, in case you couldn't tell. I really like looking using heat maps to look at things. Also, something that I find kind of cool is in 1972, everyone really liked the Republican candidate. We will see who that is in a moment. I'm sure most of you know. I don't. Well, I didn't. So another feature that I really like is it's very easy to... It's not so important in this particular example, which is fairly low dimensional, but as soon as you get into high dimensions, heat maps can start to look really, really ugly. So it's very easy to just, if you have clusters or groups, to just smooth within that. So all you have to do is write smooth.heat equals true, and it does that for you. This is just a really nice way. I mean, it didn't really make sense to have all of the individual rows when you don't know what they mean anymore. So this is going to come back again when I focus on a higher dimensional example. And then here is another nice feature of Superheat. You can add extra stuff to it, right? So above each of the columns, I've added a bar plot. So this bar plot tells me each year how many people actually voted in the election. And it's surprisingly consistent. In 1916, there was like 60% voter turnout, and it dropped to about 50% the next 2 years, and then it kind of hovered around those values. Again, I could add something to the on the right-hand side. These could also be other types of plots. They could be scatter plots, they could be line plots, box plots, whatever you want. I also want to rearrange them within each cluster on the states, for example. So here I'm still clustering by region. I've forced it to show me the state names because I would rather see the state names themselves. For example, we can see California is highly populous, so is New York, and I've just ordered it by within each cluster by decreasing population. And the nice thing is, if you use this order.rows argument or order.columns, whatever you want, it's going to order within the cluster, so you don't have to do that. If you don't have any clusters, obviously it will order within the whole matrix, but you can specify the plot type, and you can specify the name of the plot. There's a lot of options for plot type. I've got a vignette on my GitHub, which I'll link to in a bit, which tells you about all the types. So I've actually changed the colors of these plots. They're kind of brown now. They look the same on the screen. Doesn't matter. And I've gone back to these kind of clusterings, and I've changed these to box plots. And now I want to add text, right? So that's I think, a really, really useful thing. Some people really want to plot matrices. They want to have the values on each cell and have the color behind that, and this is a really easy way to do that. You literally just give an x.text matrix, which is the same dimension as your original matrix, unless you've clustered, in which case it's the same dimension as the clustered matrix. And it literally just plots all of the values here. So I've just got here a four row, however many columns, text matrix, and I just made the first 2 rows blank. You know, it was just a very easy way of doing this. So in case you were wondering, people really liked Nixon. So it's just very, very easy to use, intuitive. The arguments are very kind of what you think they will be, at least what I think they will be. I wrote them, so that makes sense. So this was a very small data example, and I guess the natural question is, okay, what if I have a really big data set? What happens? Does it get really ugly? Does it, you know, what happens? So I'm going to kind of go through a quick fMRI example. So this is data from our research lab, and basically, if you don't know what fMRI is, it's kind of like measuring activity in your brain via kind of cubic region. So it's like you kind of split the brain up into cubic voxels as you would split an image into pixels. So we've kind of got here is just like one slice of the brain, and we can see in these regions there's a lot of activity, blood flow, whatever, it doesn't matter. And we're kind of interested in seeing, okay, if we put one individual, and we show them 1,750 images, how does their brain react to each of those images? Okay, so this is not massive data set. It's bigger than most heat maps will have. So I've got my design matrix where the rows are images. So it's kind of my observations are images. And each image is, so this is like a grayscale image which you kind of stretch out into a vector. You could think of it as just like converting the matrix into a vector, except really you're doing Gabor transformations, but for our context, it doesn't really matter. Each image is represented as a vector. I have 1,750 of those images. And for each image, I have a response for each single voxel in the brain. So I know how each cubic region in the brain, in the visual cortex specifically, I know how each region reacts to each image. So I've got 20 voxel responses. I think I actually have more like 1,000. This was an old version. So here I can kind of just plot this design matrix. So it's the same as this matrix on the left, transposed. So each image corresponds to a column. Each row corresponds to one of these features. So you could think of like each column is just a single image, like the vector version of the image. And I've kind of just told Superheat, give me two image clusters, two row clusters and two column clusters. And I could look and see, okay, which images fell into the first cluster, which images fell into the second cluster. And what the colors here are telling me is the value of the feature. Right, so it's saying that the images in cluster 2 tend to have much higher values of whatever this feature means. I'm not going to go into that, it's not really relevant. So the images in cluster 1 are much, like, it's much kind of harder for me at least to see what it is. There's not really a focal point. Whereas the images in cluster 2, you know, you've got houses and pillars and flowers, like there's a much clearer focal point in the image. So I think there's probably just a lot more information encoded in these Gabor features. So now maybe within my heat map, I want to be able to visualize, okay, so how is the brain reacting to each of these clusters of images? I can see the first cluster. So what I plotted on top here is each of these points lies above a column, corresponding to which image the individual is looking at. And I've just taken all of my voxels and I just got the first principal component and I'm plotting that. So this is kind of like within the entire brain, how active is the brain when looking at each image. And you can see in image cluster 2, the brain is a lot more active when looking at these kind of clearer images than the less clear ones. These are randomly chosen images from each cluster. So now we can see when we've got kind of higher dimensional images, the heat maps look kind of, they're just very fuzzy and noisy, right? This is like very typical because you've only got so many pixels on a screen, you can only do so much. So this is where the smoothing comes in handy. So you can, it's literally just taking the median within each cluster. You can change it to the mean if you want. And it smooths and it makes it a lot clearer. So you can kind of compare in a much clearer way. And I'll change these to box plots just for variability, why not? So I'm also making a Shiny app, which is almost done. It's not quite done. Basically, you can either select one of the preloaded data sets, which is the Republican votes example, or you can upload your own data set or matrix. You can change things, and it's basically you've got kind of your option panel, and then below it's going to plot the heat map, whatever your options specify. So you can choose a color palette, you can manually select, so it gives you a kind of sliding range. And you can put it wherever you want. There's a lot of things you can change. You can view the code that creates it, so it's very reproducible. You don't have to remember what panels you used. And you can download whatever you create with the app, so I'm kind of excited about this. I've actually been using this to make my heat maps instead of just coding it manually, because it's very easy to just change things and see what changes. So this is going to be on CRAN very, very soon, probably within the next few weeks. The package is called Superheat, and at the moment you can find it on my GitHub, which is my name, rlbata, -superheat, and on this GitHub account you will find a very detailed vignette which goes through all of the things you can do with it. So yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rebecca. We have time for a couple of questions. Anyone in the audience? Sir, in the back. So the question is whether the clustering that's performed in the package is done using code internal to it or using code imported from other packages.
So the default clustering is just using the standard k-means algorithm that you would have in R. I think it's in the mass package. I can't remember. But actually, I find the best way to do it is to, if you want to do your own clustering, you can just import whatever membership vector you want. So you can kind of, you can do your clustering and then you've got a membership vector and you can just use that.
Let's see, sir, here in the front.
Can you extract the cluster information from the heatmap object?
The question is whether it is possible to extract the clustering information from the heatmap object.
Yeah, you can. So you can actually save the heatmap as a variable, and then there's a element of that, which is, I think it's like membership rows, membership columns. So you can, yeah.
I think there was a question back here. I forgot to, yes, gentle sir, in the middle. So the question is that the heat maps in the presentation seem to be similar to the aesthetics in ggplot, and the question is whether they're using such aesthetics.
Yeah, so that's actually something that I forgot to mention. So I built this on top of geomraster and geomtile, and then the scatter plots and whatnot are all ggplot objects as well. So it's literally just using gtable, because it's kind of hard to use gtable if you're not very familiar with it. So it's kind of just doing all the hard work to combine all these ggplot objects. But yeah.
Okay. Unless there's any other one more brief question, I guess we'll thank our speaker and thank you very much.